Hello, friends. Precious D here. This episode is cursed. The first time we recorded it, the sound was just crap. And this time, some of the sound just disappeared. Somebody's audio just cut off about halfway through. So I'm going to upload what we have. If we're able to recover the rest of it, then I will replace it later. But what do you want for nothing? Play the music.
One,
two,
three,
four.
Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster
movie.
Fun time,
go!
Monster movie.
Fun time, go!
With Precious D and Honey Bee.
Fun time, go!
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and neighbors, welcome to Monster Movie Fun Time Go. I am one of your hosts, Precious D.
And I am the other one of your hosts, Honey Bee.
We are two best friends making our way through the history of kaiju movies. We started in 1933 with King Kong, and now we are up to what? 2000. 2002 with our long-awaited Reign of Fire episode.
Reign of Fire!
Sorry for the delay, folks. We had tried recording this during a lunch break on our phones, and the sound quality was just too terrible.
It was
so I threw it out.
Garbage.
Yeah. But then we ran into various scheduling issues and stuff, and so I've been doing some filler episodes. But before we get into that, we want to mention the big news, which you've probably heard by now, which is that Godzilla Minus One won an Academy Award for Best Visual Effects.
Yay!
And I think it was a huge mistake for Japan not to submit it for Best International Film. Because I think it might have won. They submitted something else that seemed a little more mainstream, and it did not win. So this is the first Academy Award win, and I think even first nomination for a Godzilla film. But it won 8 Japanese Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Including Best Picture. And I believe Shin Godzilla had previously won some Japanese Academy Awards. I think that one might have also gotten Best Picture. So that is very exciting.
So exciting.
I saw a meme today on, Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It was a picture from some movie with a, you know, 3 or 4 people like French aristocrats, that clothing, you know, period clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And under it said, you know, it said, Godzilla fans, now that Godzilla Minus One has won an Academy Award.
Oh,
very fancy.
That's
now.
Amazing.
Yeah. But today, and in just 10 days from when we record this, it'll be more like 6 days from when this is released, Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, will come out. We will see that as soon as we can, and we'll do a little segment on it. We won't break down the whole picture, but we'll talk about it, give it our general review.
Yeah, I am.
But today we
are talking. So happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. Today we're talking about Reign of Fire, though, a sort of kaiju movie. It's a dragon movie from 2002. It is directed by Rob Bowman. From a screenplay by Greg Chabot, Kevin Peterka, and Matt Greenberg. It is in color, 102 minutes from the United Kingdom, Ireland, and the United States. The budget was $60 million. Box office was $82.2 million. So, not great, but it didn't lose money. They generally say you need to make double your cost in order to show a real profit. So that's a little disappointing.
Bummer.
I saw a dragon movie on Netflix a couple days ago.
Oh?
Damsel, starring Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh.
Apparently she is the queen of Netflix now, or the princess of Netflix.
Okay.
like I didn't originate this comparison, but somebody said if Adam Sandler is the king of Netflix, then Millie Bobby Brown is the princess of Netflix.
Why the fuck is Adam Sandler the king of Netflix?
He has like a multi-picture deal with them to make exclusive movies for them. He's done several of them. And she, of course, she was in Stranger Things, but she's now been in two Enola Holmes movies and now this thing, all for Netflix. So, yeah, she's, I think they've got her contract locked down over at Netflix. Anyway, this dragon movie, though, Honey Bee, what did you think of this dragon movie?
This dragon movie, first of all, I'm super surprised that I didn't see this in 2002, but maybe I just was too young. I don't know. But yeah, this movie is basically just a lot of dudes doing dude shit with dragons, pretty much. That is my entire breakdown for this movie. It's just like so many times when I was watching this movie, I was just like, oh, bro. Like, it's just for the boys. This movie is for the boys. There is hardly even any women in this movie. Like, we do have a woman in the movie that's kind of a main character, and I love her, and she's great. But mostly, it's just a bunch of hot-ass dudes doing hot-ass dude shit, which is, like, sweating, being an asshole, and fighting dragons.
Yeah, I characterize them as sweaty assholes rather than dudes. Each one more asshole-y than the last. Just everybody acting like a jerk.
Yeah, it's just asshole soup, which, now that I've said that out loud, I apologize. So sorry.
So, who are these assholes? These assholes are Christian Bale as Quinn Abercrombie, Ben Thornton as young Quinn, Matthew McConaughey as Denton Van Zan, Isabella Scorupco as Alex Jensen. She was in Goldeneye, looking completely different. Gerard Butler as Creedy, Scott Mutter as Jared Wilkie, David Kennedy as Eddie Stacks, Alexander Siddig as AJ, he used to be on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Ned Dennehy as Barlow, Rory Kiernan as Devin, Terrence Maynard as Gideon, Doug Cockle as Gooch, Randall Carton as Burke.
Sorry, Doug Cockles. Doug Cockle was Gooch. Good Gooch, Lord.
Yep. Yep. Can't make it up. Chris Kelly as Mead. Alice Krieg as Karen Abercrombie. That's the dead mother. And Jack Gleason as Kid. There was some women in the background, I think. But basically, yeah, we have a dead mother in the beginning. And then this pilot woman, Alex, later in the film, and that's about it for the ladies.
Yeah. Oh, and the kids. Oh, I love the kids in this movie.
They were adorable.
They did so. Anytime there's a scene happening and there are kids around or in the background, they are all so expressive. They are super in it.
Yeah.
They're not like looking around like, hee hee, what do I do now? Like, they are in it to win it. And I appreciated the kid scenes so much.
Yeah, my favorite part of this movie is when Quinn and Creedy are telling, it's story time for the kids. They are reenacting the climax of The Empire Strikes Back, while at the same time very carefully not using any trademarked or copyrighted terms or names.
It's so good.
They refer to the characters as the White Knight and the Black Knight. But it's very clear that that is the scene they are doing. And I just love this idea that the stories would become folk tales that would live on in the half-remembered future.
And I love this scene, too, because whenever they, like, finish the story and it's time for the kids to go to bed, you know, they're like, one more story, one more, like, can you do The Lion King? And, like, they start, like, you know, saying these other stories. And I just love that these guys are, you know, from memory and just two guys doing, like, acting out these stories for these kids, and it's so good. Oh, that was a very heartwarming part.
When he says, I am your father, the kids all gasp. And I've seen like on YouTube reaction videos of people who are seeing that scene for the first time, both adults and little kids. And that is generally the reaction they have.
It is a shocking moment. Reaction. It's a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of there, hold on. This is a little bit of a sidebar here, but, there is a documentary on shit. I can't remember. I think it's Prime. Hold on. Pause. Uh-huh. Pause for the cause. Okay. Sorry. There is a Star Wars documentary on Disney called Light and Magic. If you have not watched it, you need to.
Okay.
And then
The last Star Wars documentary I watched, I think, is called A Disturbance in the Force. And it's about the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh.
So that is on my Vudu if you care to watch it.
Okay. Well, this I haven't watched yet, but Gus watched it and he was like raving about it. And he said, we need to watch it because it's all about the special effects.
Yeah. Well, Industrial Light and Magic is the name of the effects company. Lucas's effects company.
Yes. So it's like
I guess Disney owns it now.
But. Right. But this is about when they were making, you know, the first, not the first Star Wars movie, but the first Star Wars movie that came out. So, right. Yes.
So all that stuff that he erased when he put out the special edition.
Yes.
When he put out the special edition, he took some fucking computers and drew over all of that hard work all those people had done.
Wah, wah, wah.
So you should watch the People versus George Lucas for that story. Anyways,
back to the dragon slaying.
We've talked in the past about our dragons, kaiju, and basically it depends. And what I liked about this movie and the reason I decided to go ahead and do it, apart from the fact that there's not that many kaiju movies out in this period, is that this shows what happens if the kaiju come and tear everything up. Because normally they come and they attack a city and they trash it, but then in the next movie, everything's better. Everything's been fixed. But if you've got a whole bunch of monsters trashing everything, it means it's the apocalypse. And that's what we get. We get a dragon apocalypse. And I just like that whole idea of there being a long-lasting effect of the appearance of these monsters instead of just, oh, we killed it right away and everything's fine.
Yeah, I really love when we have a kaiju movie that has not more than one kaiju, but like Legion or Destroya, you know, how there's just like several kaiju just, you know, taking over just so many. I love that. I just love it so much. I love, of course, when there's like one kaiju or like one-on-one battles with the kaiju, but something about there just being a fucking swarm of this monster tearing shit up, it's just so hardcore, and I really love that. I loved this movie. And also, I think we talked about this, but I am so used to Matthew McConaughey just playing the like good old sweet dumb Texas boy who's like, woohoo, I'm just so damn charming. I really was shocked but also enjoyed his performance as probably the biggest asshole of the movie, and just his like rough, rugged, raw, still from Texas, but very just
he will never hardcore. He will never not be from Texas.
At least he's consistent.
Just like how Arnold Schwarzenegger will never not be from Austria, Matthew McConaughey will never not be from Texas.
I thought he did so good, though, in this movie. Because there's points where he's just, I mean, he's an asshole the entire movie. But there are these small points where he kind of shows a little bit of his humanity. When the part where he admits that he's wrong. And also when there's a moment where he asks Alex, the lady pilot, if she's scared. And they kind of have this moment of, like, just him giving a shit about her. Oh, yeah. And then also the moment when he's, like, burying some of the guys that he's lost. So he does still, he's very rough and rugged and, like, just, like, hardcore asshole, raw. But then he also has these little moments of just humanity and kind of, I don't know if I would say softness, but I did just really appreciate his acting in this movie as far as just being something way outside of what I'm used to seeing him being in. And I don't know if that's because I haven't watched a lot of his movies. I feel like I have, but I mean, to me, he's always gonna be all right, all right, all right, you know what I mean? Like, you got a joint,
yeah,
it'd be a lot cooler if you did. Like, that's just who he is to me. So to see him, like, bald and buff, like when he rips his shirt off at one point in this movie, I was like, well, god damn, like, that's crazy. He is so wildly different in this film than anything I've seen
him in. He's bald with a giant beard in this movie. Like, his biggest asshole moment, though, is when they're celebrating that a dragon's been killed. And he comes into the party and tells them all what a bunch of fucking assholes and idiots you are.
I can't remember
what exactly his reasoning was, other than there's still other dragons out there. And
basically, his reasoning was that three of his men had died, and that they were, like, celebrating and being insensitive to the men that he had lost.
Yeah, well, this is probably the first time these people have seen a dragon go down.
Exactly.
It's giving them hope.
Exactly.
And they're happy about it.
Yes, exactly that.
Just a dick. People sometimes celebrate a successful battle even when they've lost friends in that battle.
That's even more reason, I think, to celebrate. Not that you lost people, but to celebrate their lives and the fact that they didn't die in vain because they're dead, yes, but now we know we can kill this dragon. Now we have hope. Now we should celebrate that. Yeah. And it boosts morale and all of these things. So, yeah, I mean, he's a douchebag. Also, though, I am a huge Gerard Butler fan as well. And seeing a little young baby Jerry in this movie just made me so happy. I'm like, oh my gosh, look how cute he is in the beginning of his career. Get it, bitch.
Well, let's get into the plot, where you have a summary from Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Thank you.
When Quinn Abercrombie is visiting a London underground construction project, workers penetrate a cave.
Crazy.
And a huge dragon emerges from hibernation, incinerating the workers with its fire breath. I like this first bit here where his mother works in the tunneling project, and he has clearly come there after school, and he's joking around with all the adults that are on their way out and saying hi to everybody. And they're
I love that.
Super friendly and kind to him, and then they get killed. The only survivor is Quinn, whose mother, Karen, the project engineer, is killed protecting him. The dragon flies out of the underground, and soon more dragons appear. The world's militaries have failed to stop the spread of the dragon population and targeted large population areas with nuclear weapons, leaving humans nearly extinct.
Damn.
The dragons are dying off, and they become increasingly aggressive in search for food. Is there a opening narration about this?
It's not a narration, but we kind of get this sequence where we just see a bunch of things, like newspaper, like Time magazine, articles, like all of this.
No, the thing about how the dragons come every now and then and kill everything, but then their population gets too big and they die off and go into hibernation.
Yeah, I think it's like smoky Quinn voice, like, this is how the world happened this way, la 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 la.
So we're meant to believe that some of the past extinction events that have happened is because dragons, even though they didn't leave any physical evidence behind, until this one subway project.
Whoopsie.
Wakes one up. Hey.
And he just spits in Quinn's face.
Quinn, along with his best friend Creedy, leads a community of survivors at Bamberg Castle, Northumberland, where he plans to outlast dragons until they go back into hibernation. As insurance, he shares his notes and plans with Jared, an orphan he rescued, and is mentoring to take over as community leader. The community is short on supplies and in a state of unrest pending the harvest of their meager crops. Eddie and a group of his followers steal a truck to harvest the crops for food, but they are attacked by a dragon.
These, way to go, Eddie. These fucking assholes. Dick. Like, come on, you guys. God. There's always got to be that Quinn, one guy.
Creedy. Yeah, yeah. Quinn, Creedy, and Jared repel the dragon, but the dragon burns the majority of crops, leaving the community without food. And there's a weird thing about the dragons eat ash.
Yeah.
But apparently they will also eat other dragons.
They'll pretty much eat anything. Because we also see them eat people. We see them eat a lot of things throughout the movie. But yeah, in the beginning, like when that montage thing happens, we see a newspaper article where it's like, the dragons, they're eating ash, so they have to burn everything down so that they can eat the ash. But this is one of those movies where if you think about things too logically or for too long, they stop making sense. So you just kind of have to stop. Yeah. And just enjoy the ride. Yeah.
Shortly afterward, a group of heavily armed Americans, and as they say in the film, the only thing worse than dragons, Americans.
One of my favorite parts.
Led by Denton Van Zan, arrive in an armored convoy, including a Chieftain tank and an Augusta Westland AW-109 utility helicopter.
Yeah, this is one of those things that... I guess, honestly, two of those things where, like, if you think about it too hard, it'll kind of piss you off. Like, I'm like, where are they getting fuel for the helicopter and the tank? And how is there just a helicopter flying around when they can't even walk out to the crops and steal food without a dragon coming? Now all of a sudden a helicopter can fly around and the dragon just doesn't give a shit? Like, kind of stupid. Yeah. But just don't think about it.
I believe gasoline does actually have a shelf life. You can't just leave it laying around forever. I heard this somewhere in regards to some other movie where something starts up after like hundreds of years. Like that gas would either be no good or it would have evaporated or something. But maybe they've converted a lot. In a lot of post-apocalyptic things, people convert their vehicles to run off of alcohol. So I'm sure you can run a helicopter off of grain alcohol.
Off a hooch.
I'm sure it's no problem. Whatsoever. But yeah, somebody on Wikipedia wants us to know that they know exactly what kind of helicopter this was.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Quinn is initially skeptical and suspects that they are marauders, but Van Zan convinces him to let them stay when he reveals the dragon's main weakness, poor vision during twilight. A very specific weakness. With Quinn's help, Van Zan and his team hunt and slay the dragon who destroyed the crops. Van Zan, how did they kill it? With the...
They set up a perimeter.
Tank?
And then they, like, drop a net on it. And then once the dragon, like, falls to the ground, they, like, you know, shoot it to death.
But I can't remember if they tank shot things or if they had, like, big, giant crossbows or...
Both.
What it was. We know later they have crossbows with explosive bolts. Van Zan introduces Quinn to Alex Jensen, the team's helicopter pilot and intelligence officer, and brief Quinn on their mission. After killing hundreds of dragons, Alex discovers that they were all female. She postulates that they reproduce quickly because the species relies on a single male to fertilize all the eggs en masse. Having tracked the spread of the dragons, they believe that the male is located in London and that if they kill it, the dragons will no longer be able to reproduce, effectively killing the species.
I think it's kind of funny how they're like, oh, the male in London, and Quinn's like, oh, shit, like, I know this dragon. Like, he never says that, but there's just kind of always this air of it, like, he's like, oh, London, yeah, I know this. Even though he hasn't been there since he was a boy, and it's the whole entire apocalypse, he's like, yeah, I know these roads like the back of my hand, like, I know this place.
That's a dragon that killed my mother. Quinn, suspecting that the male dragon is the same one that killed his mother, refuses to help. Well, that doesn't make sense. Knowing that London is infested with dragons, and that if they fail, the dragons will track them back to their shelter. And they tell Van Zan, he tells Van Zan not to do something, and then he goes out and does it. He warns him that that's going to happen. If you go harassing this dragon, they're going to, because somebody else, it happened to somebody else. They tracked them back to their, it was a different group. They had their own little hideout, and the dragons tracked them back to it and killed them all. Van Zan drafts the castle defenders despite Quinn's objections and a physical altercation between the two. Van Zan, Alex, and some of the castle's men then depart for London. Well, folks, that's all there is. Sorry about that. I guess it's better than nothing. Next week, we're going to backtrack a little bit to a movie that I had on my list, but it somehow dropped off and we skipped it. It's called Reptilian in the United States, but it's actually a remake of Yongari, the South Korean kaiju movie. It is available on Tubi, I believe, and maybe on YouTube as well. I'm sure you can find it free somewhere. It's called Reptilian. Good luck. Until next week, I've been Precious D. Remember to keep calm and take shelter in basements. Please don't misuse science. We won't see you, but you will hear us next time on Monster Movie Funtime Go. You've been listening to Monster Movie Funtime Go. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is by the Texicato Folk Rock Punk featuring Lita Lopez. You can support the show, find links to our social media, and even leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/mmftg.